Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today on episode number 61, we are reviewing Selma, continuing our series focusing on movies directed by African-Americans and starring African-Americans. And this one has both of those aspects, directed by an African-American, Ava DuVernay, and starring a lot of African-Americans in the film. So we'll talk about that here on today's episode. And speaking of Selma, you can still watch it free, I believe, certain places. Some places you might have to rent it. The rental fee I saw on YouTube was like $3, so that's definitely worth it to check out this movie if you haven't seen it, but some places it might still be free to watch. It was free through the month of June, so some of those places I think still have possibly it free until they change it or whatever. So you might be able to still find it free somewhere to watch, and it was free for the entire month of June. So we'll be talking about Selma today, and we also wanted to say for the next few episodes of the Silver Screen Podcast, because we don't really have anything coming out in theaters until August now, with Tenet and Mulan both getting delayed, that we want to hear from you and hear some recommendations that you might want to hear us cover on the show. So, Katie, people can just reach out to us on social media if they have a movie or something that they would like us to discuss here on the show.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. If you do have something that you want us to watch that does focus more on the Black community and the Black experience, we are more than happy to cover that. I am still continuing my 21-day racial equity challenge, so I'll keep you posted on that. And then also, I am continuing, I've made a whole list on Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV, what have you, to continue watching movies that focus more on African-Americans, but we figured we did the ones that we knew would be kind of like good topic and discussion movies. And then we just thought we would see what we could, if we could switch it up a little bit in the coming weeks.
Yes. So this movie is about Martin Luther King Jr. and the Selma March and kind of his legacy and what he did to work with the president and other communities to kind of help stop racism. His big thing was getting Blacks the power to vote, especially that's what's focused on in this movie. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later on. And we can also talk about some of our other recommendations. Katie, you talked about that, but I know you've also made a list of kind of everything that you want to watch on the various streaming services to make sure that you can get through it all, because there is just so much content out there.
Yes, I'm kind of embarrassed, but not really, because Hulu, I love that Hulu does is Hulu has a category that says expiring soon. So yes, it'll tell you what's expiring. So one movie I was going to recommend this week, I watched an old movie from 1984. It's not old because that's almost when I was born, but it's still, I'm just saying, like, it's not a movie that's like common today, but it's called Romancing the Stone. I'd heard about it forever. It's Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, and they had it on Hulu. And I was like, I'm going to recommend this. This movie was adorable. And then it was expiring. So it's expired today. Like, it's done. It was done yesterday. It was the last day you could watch it. But I appreciate that Hulu does that and gives you a heads up. However, Netflix does not. Netflix, you have to individually click on the things, and if it's expiring soon, it'll tell you. But you would have to, like, in your queue, let's say you have 50 things in your queue, then you have to look through the 50 individual things. So what I did was I made a list of, I got rid of a bunch of things that were in my queue that people have recommended. And I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I should watch that. But I know I'm never going to watch it. Like, there's some things that just don't sound great to me. And I admit too, I'm a little like, it's more because of the time period. Like, right now I do want to focus on movies about the Black experience. And then I also, there's some movies that I know are going to be incredibly depressing, or TV shows where I'm like, I don't want to watch this during COVID while I'm still working from home. And, you know, like, this isn't what I want to know about right now. Anyway, I made a list of everything. So I put a documentary category, I put a TV show category, I put a movie category. So I'm hoping that'll also help me cross things off too, because I feel like every time I watch a show or something with Arjun, I'll be like, hey, what do you want to watch? And then he doesn't know. Or I'll go when I used to visit my parents. I remember them.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID. we would like scroll through Netflix for I don't know how long, just talking about the things we could watch.
20, 30 minutes. Does this happen to
anybody else? Yeah. Like, oh, that's a great movie, Dad. Remember that time? And then mom would say like, oh, that show was so cute. I watched that when I was little. And it would just, it was a great, fun discussion. But I was also like, I don't want to scroll through Netflix as my TV for the night. Like, that's not Anyway, I don't mean to drone on. I'm just letting you know. I made this list and I did want to recommend Romancing the Stone, but there's no point. But I did want to tell you, I had a particularly hard day this week and I was like, all I want to do is eat ice cream and watch Murder, She Wrote. So I pulled out my Murder, She Wrote DVDs and watched a couple episodes and it instantly brightened my day.
Nice.
So that's... if nothing else, please watch Murder, She Wrote.
There you go. One annoying thing I was going to say about Disney Plus in terms of that whole list thing is that Disney Plus will show things on there that they are going to get at some point, like Disney movies, but they're on another streaming service right now, but they know the date that they're going to get it on Disney Plus. So say
that's
you want to watch, like, I don't know, let's use Toy Story as an example, even though it's on there. Okay. So like you click on Toy Story and it's like, this title will be available on Disney Plus on January 1st, 2021. And you're like, well, why is it listed as something that I could, it makes it seem like if I can click on it that I can watch it now. So
yeah,
just like
dumb.
Take the you know, the image of it off of there until you actually have it, because that just that has deceived me like 3 or 4 times on Disney Plus. I'm like, oh, this is on here, and then you click on it and it's like, this is coming to Disney Plus, you know, in September.
Yep.
You're like, okay, well, I don't really, that's useless to me now, so why is
ridiculous.
That on there?
Ridiculous.
I also like to make some lists too of like things to watch, because like you said, sometimes
you
just get scrolling, and I feel like Netflix does a really good job with the whole adding it to your list type thing.
Yes,
but Hulu and some of the other ones don't do a great job of that. Like HBO Max is like awful as far as trying to add stuff to your list. And
then
Apple TV Plus is also not great. So some of them are harder than others to keep track of like what you want to watch on there.
Yeah, so they have their ups and downs. I just know that I think I probably watch Netflix the most out of any streaming service, but I appreciate Hulu because it has current things that I can watch the next day. And I also appreciate that they have the expiring list.
Yeah, that is really nice.
And then also, I could be wrong about this, but I kind of think it only shows expiring movies. I don't think, it will show TV, like if you click on, like if
the
I
show.
Click on The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It'll say expiring and whatever. But,
and it'll have like, usually
thing,
it'll have like letters over the image or whatever, like big letters that'll be like expiring soon.
Expiring
so you know
soon.
If you haven't watched that, that you should probably watch it. And then when you click on it, it'll tell you like when it's going off of there. Yeah.
Yes. I'm really glad that I appreciate so much that you're validating this, because I wondered if I was the only one that noticed these things. Jared, the only other thing I have to recommend, I read Becoming. I did it.
The whole thing.
So Becoming by Michelle Obama only took me a couple days. It probably took me a day and a half longer than I wanted, but it is a very dense book. And what I mean by dense is I unfortunately think people have lowered their caliber for standards of like writing and stuff today.
Yes.
And a lot of things are quick reads, and that's great. Part of that is the reason I can read so much in a year is because books are easier.
Yep.
But Michelle Obama is so intelligent that like it took me time. Like I would think, oh my gosh, normally I could get through 100 pages today, no problem. I'd get through like 40.
Okay.
And it would take me a long time.
Well, that can be such like interesting subject matter too, since she was the first lady. Like some of that stuff is going to be more in depth than maybe other books would be on certain topics.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't mean any of it as a negative. It is one of the best books I've ever read. It is easily the best memoir I've ever read.
Okay.
And I love memoirs. Like memoirs are not my favorite genre, but they're definitely one that I read a lot of. But it's fantastic. And no, put all politics aside, though, I have thought this woman was classy since day one. And all this did was solidify it. She is so intelligent and compassionate, cares about what she cares about, and she can tell you why. And honestly, I related to a lot of how she was feeling, and especially when she was talking about trying to find what her career path should be, and before she became a mother and before she became a wife. I loved it so much. So whether or not you are Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever you are, I think that this is a great read and anyone can learn something from it.
Nice. I have two quick recommendations. They're both on Disney Plus, but they are things to watch if you're interested in the movie making process or how things come together. So I feel like a lot of times when you get a DVD of a movie, they'll have like a making of thing on there, but it'll be like 30 minutes. And you're like, I know it took longer than that to make the movie. You just really like cut this all down very quickly. So the two that are on there right now, one that I've been watching, and there's 6 episodes I've watched 4 so far, is Into the Unknown. It's about the making of Frozen 2. And it's really interesting. Even if you don't like the Frozen series, they talk about things like how they come up with the songs for the movie. And they show the voice actors recording their lines. And they show the animators going to dailies and seeing, like, watching their clips with the director and them giving them notes. And they show you, like, test screenings. And so it's very interesting. And it goes from, like, 11 months before the movie was released. And I'm assuming the last episode is like the release date of the movie, the premiere. So it kind of takes you through that process of how they're working on things. And it's very interesting to watch again, if you're interested in movie making and how that comes together. It's kind of cool to see how that whole process works on a long form scale, because it is like 6 hours, all the episodes combined, because they're all about 45, 50 minutes. So I think it just gives you a really in-depth look at how, like, movies get made. So that one's really interesting. And then the Mandalorian documentary, if you've seen the Mandalorian, the Star Wars show, that's also another documentary that they've done that's like, I think, 8 episodes. Those are like 30 minutes, but takes you through kind of like the directors behind The Mandalorian, because each episode was directed by like a different person, and how they did the costumes and the sets and special effects and all that stuff. So if you're interested in the behind the scenes of movies, then definitely check both of those out on Disney Plus, the Frozen 2 documentary and then The Mandalorian 2. So I thought
that's awesome.
I started the Frozen 2 one because I was like, I like movie making, and I didn't think I was going to be super interested in it. But then I watched like 3 episodes last night, and I watched one more today before we recorded. So it's really interesting to me. So check those out again on Disney Plus. And of course, by the time this episode comes out, Hamilton is on Disney Plus now too. So I'm going to just throw that up as a recommend, because everybody should just watch Hamilton. So
I will 100% be watching that over the holiday weekend.
There you go. So with that, we'll move into our review of Selma. This came out a limited release December 24th of 2014, and then wide release January 9th of 2015. Came right before Oscar time. I don't know, because it was nominated for Best Picture. It may have been nominated or close to, it may have been already nominated for some other things like SAG Awards, Golden Globes, things like that before it even came out in theaters. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it did get nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. So I know it had a lot of Oscar buzz going into Oscar season. I remember seeing it in the theater. I was still going to UIndy at that time. I think I just went and saw it like between classes one day, because I had a couple free hours went, and there's a theater by our campus, and went and checked it out. So that would have been my last semester. So I was definitely in that, you know, senior zone out time where I was like, let's just get through the rest of the semester and graduate. So this is rated PG-13 for disturbing thematic material, including violence, a suggestive moment, and brief strong language. It's 2 hours and 8 minutes. IMDb 7.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 99%. Audience 86%. Very highly rated movie.
Those are high numbers.
It is. And then box office wise, at a $20 million budget, domestically it made $52 million, and worldwide it made $66 million. So not a real high grossing movie at the box office, which is kind of surprising because it is a very good movie. Granted, it's kind of on a limited subject matter, but I think some of these movies like this can be really good. The one I go back to is Harriet, that we saw back in November, that was kind of a smaller budget and definitely didn't have a huge box office around it either by the time that movie was out of theaters, but a movie that you and I both really liked and kind of one of the like underdogs of last year, the ones that kind of flew under the radar. So I think Selma was kind of the same way back in 2015. So the synopsis, if you don't know, it's a chronicle of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s campaign to secure equal voting rights via an epic march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, in 1965. And we have some critics' reviews of this film. First up is Owen Gleiberman from BBC.com, who says, directed with confidence by Ava DuVernay, it's a movie about how King changed America by having the canny political genius to show the country an image of itself that it could not bear. Also, we
have...
Yeah,
that's hard to hear.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
it really
I was just
going
to say, like, that's hard to hear, but I'm glad he said something. I was really pretty pleased with the quotes today, but I have to say that I was surprised the critics, a lot of them were really kind of gave a harsh criticism of this movie, which is weird because they gave it 99%. So just wanted to comment on that. It was odd, but maybe I just picked a few weird ones. That's
also, I think if they like score it, I forget what it is on Rotten Tomatoes. It's either if it's like above 3 out of 5 or 3.5 out of 5, it will count it as a positive review.
Yes.
But like a 3 out of 5, they still could have issues with the movie. Like they're not saying it's 5 out of 5. So
good point.
That is one thing that happens on Rotten Tomatoes sometimes. And then next up, we have Leslie Morris from Grantland, who says, this is a film about work. The work at hand, the work it takes to do the work, and for an audience in 2015, the question of whether the work worked. Which is a good point. So, and then finally, we have Jeffrey McNabb from The Independent in the UK, who says, Selma is a rousing political drama made with enough verve and passion, never merely to seem didactic. Its near complete absence from this year's Oscar nominations is baffling and suggests a double standard. That was a big topic point around this movie when it came out, is that it wasn't nominated for more Oscars. Especially, I think you could definitely nominate this for screenplay. You could probably nominate David Oyelowo for his role as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
I would say director.
Yeah, and directing by Ava DuVernay. Definitely. Yeah. Like, all three of those categories could have definitely gotten an Oscar nomination for this movie. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because this actually really upset me, because I read, like, I pulled up a couple articles, nothing in particular that I want to cite, but there was a lot of controversy about this, and Brad Pitt was a producer on the film, and he was so upset when it didn't get more Oscar nominations and stuff. I think he had that same problem. He was like, I don't understand what you're looking for. And of course, he's a white man saying that. But I do think he, for the most, I like to think he's been on the right side of history for quite a long time. I'm not sure about some of the family drama, but I'm not going to dwell on that because I adore Brad Pitt. Also, I don't know if this is true, Jared. I might need to look this up or have you fact check me. So when I was looking things up, they were talking about Oprah was also, you know, she's in the movie, but she also was a producer on the movie. And it said in IMDb, this means she's the first African-American woman to be nominated for a Best Picture. And I put, is that right?
Okay.
Because that sounds, if that's correct, that's insane. But it could possibly be true, because to get Best Picture, they include directors, actors, and producers, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, is it actors too? I think that's right.
I don't know.
Yeah, because because Parasite, they all got them. They all got Oscars.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's like top billed cast or whatever. But anyway, if that's true, Oprah was the first African-American woman to be nominated for Best Picture. But if that is the case, that is appalling, because it was 2014.
Yeah, I don't know if that is true, or if she was the first African-American producer to be nominated for Best Picture, or
that could be.
I think she also produced this movie, didn't she? I mean, she has a lot of money,
Yeah, that's what I was saying. She produced it.
Okay.
In addition to starring in it.
Okay.
But they said that when it's nominated for Best Picture or whatever, they said she was the first African-American woman.
Okay.
And I was just like, how is that even possible? But if it is the truth, this is a great movie for us to cover, because it does point out how far we still have to go. Because 2014, that's unacceptable to me.
Also, it was the first film directed by a black female director to be ever nominated for Best Picture as well.
Amazing.
For Ava DuVernay.
Amazing.
So, and if you're wondering too, just back to the Brad Pitt thing, if you're like, is this a one-off that he like produced this movie? No, he likes to get behind projects that
involve
people of color, because he was an executive producer on Moonlight, executive producer on 12 Years a Slave, If Beale Street Could Talk. So like he likes to be invested in these projects. So definitely likes to pursue those stories, which I think is good. Every time I see a movie and I'm like, oh, produced by Brad Pitt, it normally comes with the thought of, oh, that was a really interesting story that needed to be told. I'm glad that Brad Pitt threw some money at that so that it could be told. So
that's exactly what I was thinking. And his production company is called Plan B Productions, which I think is adorable. That's a clever name.
So we talked about Ava. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ava DuVernay, though, I looked her up because she directed this, but she's also directed 13th, which is probably, since the protests and everything have started happening lately, I think 13th is what I've heard about the absolute most recommended. So it's a documentary and it's on Netflix right now. I wanted to make sure to mention that because it's on my list to watch it. It's high up on that list. But she also directed When They See Us, and that is a mini series that they did. I think it's 4 episodes, and it's also on Netflix and on my list. So you can already see several other projects of hers, which just based on Selma alone, I already love her direction. So I already had this on my list, but I'm going to watch them And then she has a couple upcoming projects, including two TV movies. One is called The New Gods, and it's based on the DC comic book series. So I thought that was interesting for anybody who's into DC comics. I know we have a lot of fans out there of the Marvel universe, but do a shout out for DC.
And she's still a fairly young director, but she's done some interesting projects so far, like Selma. But then she also did A Wrinkle in Time for Disney. So definitely wants to kind of like step outside of her comfort zone and try some different types of projects. And with this DC thing, I think she's kind of doing the same thing of like, I really want to make a comic book show and try to see how that works out. So definitely credit to her for trying out a lot of different types of movies and projects and things like that. So with that, we will take a quick break here on the Silver Screen Podcast, and then we'll talk more about Selma. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Selma, which came out in 2015, continuing our series of movies directed by African Americans and also films starring African Americans. And this has a predominantly African American cast, starting with David Oyelowo, who plays Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
I love this man, and his career has definitely taken off since this movie, but he was also a well-known actor before. He is an English actor. Remember I said that because it's going to come up a couple times here. he is best known for The Nightingale, King of Katwe, and A United Kingdom. He has 6 upcoming projects already. Some of them are slated for 2020. I wanted to mention that, but I think Jared and I have mentioned multiple times we are no longer adhering to the list of when these things are coming out because of COVID, because it's definitely slowed down production and release dates. But what caught my eye is one of his upcoming movies is going to be called Sweet Thunder, and he's going to play the boxer Sugar Ray Leonard. So I think that'll be really cool. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
And then next up, we have Carmen Ejogo. I hope I say her name right. She is a stunning woman, and I had seen her in quite a few things already. She plays Coretta Scott King in this movie, so MLK's wife, MLK Jr.'s wife. She is also an English actress, and she has appeared in It Comes at Night, Away We Go, and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, as well as the Grindelwald one. So she's in both of those. And she is currently starring alongside Octavia Spencer, our friend from the episode The Help that we just did. Mm-hmm. She is in Self-Made right now on Netflix. Again, that's about Madam C.J. Walker. And so Carmen's character is Addie on that show, which that is on my list as well. I have a long list, though, so please be fair to me. Next up, we have Tom Wilkinson. He is also an English actor, which I knew. He is definitely someone you've probably seen plenty of times before. In this film, he plays President Lyndon B. Johnson. He has been nominated for 2 actors prior to this, for Michael Clayton and In the Bedroom. And he's also known for The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Full Monty, and The Patriot, which despite Mel Gibson being in it, that's one of my favorites. And he also has 6 upcoming projects. I don't know how this keeps happening, that people have the same amount of projects, but it's true. But you can currently watch him on the show Belgravia, which is on FX. You can find that on Amazon Prime. But my friend Bill has been raving about Belgravia. So I haven't watched it yet, but I hear wonderful things. So wanted to throw that out there. And lastly, we have Andre Holland. He plays Andrew Young. Jared, we have the same birthday. I just thought that was cool. I feel like I know everybody talks about everybody has the same birthday as like 36,000 other people, but I feel like I don't run across that day a lot. So that was super cool. But he is, of course, older. But he has starred in 42, Moonlight, and A Wrinkle in Time. So he knows Ava DuVernay, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he is currently starring in the Netflix series, The Eddie. Eddie is spelled E-D-D-Y. I wanted to mention that in case you want to watch it. It is currently on Netflix, still there. I double checked. And his next movie is called Passing. It's a thriller, and it's also starring Ruth Negga and Tessa Thompson. So some familiar faces. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention the supporting cast. Buckle up. It's quite a list because it's a stellar cast. So also in this movie, you have Oprah Winfrey, Tessa Thompson, Giovanni Ribisi, Common, Lakeith Stanfield, I think we know how I feel about him, Omar Dorsey, Coleman Domingo, Dylan Baker, Wendell Pierce, he was on Suits, he played Meghan Markle's dad, shout out, and Stephen James, who plays Representative John Lewis, who is still a congressman to this day, and I wanted to point out, I think Stephen James has some remarkable characteristics to John Lewis. He looks so much like him. I thought it was
really
weird.
He really does. So,
yeah, so very good casting.
That's the cast for Selma. And one, as we move into likes and dislikes, I guess going off of the cast, one like that I have for this movie is that Ava DuVernay uses the cast very well in this film. It's obviously focused on Martin Luther King Jr., but I feel like the supporting cast is large, but I feel like they all get a decent number of scenes or times when it's kind of their moment in the film. So I feel like nobody is really left out. You have Oprah with a few scenes. You have Tessa Thompson with a few scenes, you know, Lakeith Stanfield, things like that. So she really uses the cast to its full potential, either having them do kind of one-on-one interactions or like when Martin Luther King Jr. goes to talk to somebody, there might be four other people with him. So that way you can get some more dialogue in there and have some more people bouncing off of one another. So I just wanted to say that I thought that was one of my likes, is that she really does a good job managing that large cast and making it doesn't really feel like anybody's super excluded and that everybody kind of gets at least a few minutes to kind of shine.
Really good call out. The cast was absolutely high on my list. I thought they were spot on. And I also liked her demonstration of using people, you know, like Lakeith Stanfield didn't have a huge role, but he had an important role. And same with Oprah Winfrey. I mean, there were just, she used people for the right amount of time. And also, I mean, David Oyelowo, it's unfortunate that he didn't get an Oscar for this, because he, I mean, there were times where if I was looking down or away from the screen, it was like listening to Martin Luther King Jr. talk.
Yeah. Yep.
Incredible. I would argue actually that David is more handsome, but that's just that's just me. But anyway, I thought the acting was spectacular and the characters were great. And that is definitely a great call out for the casting director and for Ava DuVernay.
I know you too, speaking of her, you really liked her direction of this movie and what she decided to do with some of the scenes and how to film those and shoot those, things like that.
Yes. So we've pointed out on different episodes, people like Quentin Tarantino, Spike Lee was a recent one, people that have a really unique perspective, and, or like Scorsese, you know, when Martin Scorsese has directed a film, you know, when Quentin Tarantino's directing a film. And I instantly felt, I mean, probably 15 or 20 minutes in, I felt like Ava DuVernay, she has one of those styles. And I did see A Wrinkle in Time. I was actually a little disappointed with A Wrinkle in Time, but I don't think that's her fault. But it was doubly disappointing because it was my favorite book in fifth grade. I remember I read that book so many times, I lost count. But anyway, back to Selma. I just love her direction, and I wanted to call out a couple scenes. So there's one, there's a bombing right at the beginning of this movie, and it took my breath away. I was actually eating dinner, watching the movie, and I like couldn't eat for a few minutes because I was so bothered by what had just happened. And also because I was stunned, like I didn't even see it happening. There's a scene where Oprah, she plays Alice Cooper, and not the band member, but she plays Alice Cooper, and she falls over. She gets pushed down by police officers, and the stylized element she used with the camera was so, so cool. And then also I just loved all the angles and the camera work. When people were standing on the Edmund Pettus Bridge because they were about to cross into Selma. But I thought that was super cool. But really kudos to Ava. I would gladly watch anything that she's directed at this point.
Yeah, she does some really interesting camera shots in this movie and ways she decides to film things. And you mentioned A Wrinkle in Time, and I wonder if that movie just isn't as good because it is such like a high budget. Like, I feel like it could be hard for a director to go from this, which is $20 million budget, to that, which I just looked at a budget of $100 million. Like, that's a lot. You know, it's just more stuff that you have to manage and figure out what you want to spend money on and stuff like that.
You know,
so.
You know what, too? I know we're talking about Selma, but A Wrinkle in Time, I think this is very rare. I mean, I'm always going to like books better than movies, probably. If they're a book first, I'm going to like the book better. But I actually think that A Wrinkle in Time is better just as a book. I don't think it translates really
doesn't
well to
really
movie.
Doesn't really work well as a movie,
because it's so sci-fi fantasy, which that's always the stuff I say I don't like, but I love A Wrinkle in Time. I thought that book was magic. But anyway, I just don't think it translates as well to film. But you know what? If there's any haters, please feel free to tweet at us. Or or if you agree, please. We would prefer sweet, positive comments at this time. But anyway, just a thought.
Another one of my likes for this movie is that I like that it focuses on kind of one specific time period of MLK's life, or one specific event, even with the Selma March. I feel like a lot of times biopics will try to cover the entire person's life, like we saw with Rocket Man, like we saw with kind of like Bohemian Rhapsody too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that can be tough to get everything in a person's life in 2 hours. So yep. I like that they take the approach of, you all know who Martin Luther King Jr. is. You all know he was a civil rights activist and that he did a lot of stuff to help progress the ideas and views in this country. So we don't need to explain that whole backstory to you. We're just going to pick it up when he's kind of like in the middle of his, you know, not campaign, if you will, but leadership of kind of the black community and trying to go about this one specific issue and in this one event. So that was one of my likes, is that I like that it focuses just kind of on that one thing in his life.
Definitely. I really like movies that focus on a particular time period or everything mm-hmm. happens in one day, but you fill up a whole 2 hours with the story of that day or that night, like The Lovebirds. We just recently covered yep. The Lovebirds on Netflix. It's so cool how you can stay entertained about a story that happens in someone's life and it's only been a couple hours of their life.
We also have to mention the Academy Award winning song from this movie by Common and John Legend, Glory, which plays during the credits, which is a great song.
Yes, John Legend and I also share a birthday, so that is actually really weird. I hadn't even thought of that. So Andre Holland, John Legend and I, and my brother, we all share our same birthday.
Nice. My celebrity birthdays are lame. It's Bill O'Reilly and Colin Firth are the two big ones.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody loves Colin Firth.
Yeah, yep. He is adored. Yeah. So
he's
I mean,
a
that
less
one's
polarizing
fine.
Person.
Bigger. Yeah, for sure. But the song is great. I remember they performed at the Oscars. They had this big choir behind them. It was a very powerful performance.
Too.
Yeah. Everybody like stood up and gave a standing O for it. And then it went on to win song, which makes sense. After you saw that song versus all the other ones in the category, you're like, yeah, that one should win.
Also, I usually think they save like the worst song in the film for the end, but this was the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Like I really enjoyed the music because I love the music of the 60s anyway, but I loved at the end that this was the song that closed it out. I was like, yes, let's leave on a high note. Thank you.
Yes. Some other likes, these kind of go hand in hand, but the fact that this movie doesn't shy away from Martin Luther King Jr.'s flaws, and then also the fact that if we talked about The Help and how that really doesn't go in depth on the issues of the day, this movie is kind of the complete opposite, where it does tackle those complex issues and shows you some things that covers police brutality, covers racism. All of those things are touched on in this movie. So I really appreciate that it doesn't really hold back. It's rated PG-13. It's probably straddling that line between PG-13 and an R, honestly, just because of some mm-hmm. of the things that happen in the movie. If it had more language or if it had some more intense violence, I think it would have that R rating. But definitely one that is not afraid of showing what actually went on in that time and how people of all ages were affected.
Jared, I totally agree with you because I've always had very complicated feelings about MLK because, you know, growing up, you hear really nothing but wonderful things about him. But like most people I admire, I end up finding out things that weren't good. Like I kind of went down a rabbit hole last night looking at things about Martin Luther King Jr. And I liked it less and less as I went on because there's significant evidence to support that he had witnessed a rape before, joked about it. He had mm-hmm. numerous affairs that are documented. So I don't know if I'm more bothered by the hypocrisy of being like a pastor and doing these things, like knowingly doing these things, or if I'm just bothered because he wasn't faithful. I don't know. However, at the same time, he changed the lives of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands and millions of people. And I do think he fought for the right cause. I love that he was peaceful about it. And just a humility moment. I even talked about Brad Pitt earlier, and I was willing to ignore whatever gossip I've heard about his family because I think he's pretty and I like his movies he produces. So who am I to really say whether MLK was good or not? And I think the good far outweighed the bad. But I did want to say I appreciate that this movie showed that he was a flawed person. So you saw how much he was hurting his wife, like mm-hmm. what a toll that was taking on her, and then just I don't know. I feel like there were scenes where you could see other people were uncomfortable, or they were either totally comfortable with what he was doing and supported it. But I appreciate that she showed that, and that she also explored difficult topics like different violence, police brutality, but also made this a hopeful movie too in the end.
And one thing they talk about a lot in this movie is they do mention Malcolm X a few times, and they actually have an actor portray Malcolm X in the movie. And the main difference they use is they say that MLK was more peaceful than Malcolm X, and that Lyndon B. Johnson wanted him kind of in front of the movement because he was more of a change for, you know, wanted to change things, but wanted to be peaceful about the situation. And I don't know a ton about Malcolm X. I do want to watch the movie directed by Spike Lee with Denzel in it about Malcolm X to kind of learn more. But I thought that was kind of just an interesting aspect of the movie. And it made me think it would be interesting to make a movie that, you know, focused on both MLK and Malcolm X kind of at the same time to show you, because they were both, you know, doing things during that same time period, to kind of show you how both approach the situation. That could be an interesting idea for like a film or a documentary or something. But I thought that was interesting that one thing they did focus on, like you said, is that he was always peaceful in what he was trying to do to promote change.
Yes, definitely. And I appreciate you mentioning Malcolm X too, because the last like I could think of was different footage. Like, I love when they show footage and real, you hear either audio clips or you see photos of things that really happened in history. And I thought she did a beautiful job of weaving that into the film without it being a distraction. And it really aided what was going on in the film.
And with that, we'll move over to our dislikes here. We don't have too many dislikes, but just wanted to touch on a few. I know one thing for you and one thing for me, as well as Katie's mic filter just fell down, which is what that was that you heard a second ago. So the pop filter fell off. So I'll just like vamp here while you attach that back on there if you want to. So
perfect.
But anyway, a few dislikes for this movie. This movie is 2 hours and 8 minutes. And I think one thing is that it's just a little bit too long. Like, if it was maybe 20, 30 minutes shorter, I think that could have helped. I always focus on the middle of movies because I feel like the middle is where you can normally cut out the most stuff. The beginning, that's pretty necessary to keep all of that in to kind of set up the story. And the end, normally, as long as you nail the ending, you kind of need that last 20, 30 minutes to go without being uncut. But the middle, I feel like you can cut down some things. And there's just a few things in here, like maybe you cut, even though I really like the speeches in this movie, which I wanted to say was one of my likes, but maybe you cut one of the speeches, or maybe you cut one of the scenes where he's interacting with a member of the community or something like that, just to chop off like 10 minutes of the movie.
Yes, this was definitely, I had very few dislikes of this film, but I did think it was slightly too long. I don't know that it was 30 minutes too long. I felt like maybe
like
they 10, could have
15,
cut out
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 10 minutes, because I loved the speeches as well. I more thought it definitely got longer in the middle, because we all know this is about Selma and like their trip from Montgomery to Selma. And so when they show a couple minutes in, not a couple minutes, sorry, it's like a little over an hour, right around an hour in, they get on a bridge. And I was like, wait, what's happening? I know this movie's not almost over. And it seemed like after that, what happens on the bridge, it slowed down. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Oh, this isn't the time I want it to slow down. I don't want to lose interest in this film. I can't name a specific scene. I just know that was when it started to feel long to me, was when I was like, oh my gosh, this is happening. And I was on my, you know, I was really like paying attention, ready to go. And then something stopped them from passing the bridge. No spoilers here. And then I felt like it kind of lagged after that.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Another dislike of mine, this isn't so much based on anybody in the movie or the director, this is more on the marketing department, but they pull a real bait and switch on the trailer. They put Oprah in the promotional materials for this movie a lot. She's in the trailer a decent amount. She's on the poster. And like, they made it very front and center that Oprah was in this movie. Oprah's in this movie for like 10 minutes max. So If you're expecting to see a lot of Oprah, that is not the case. So just keep that in mind as well when you're watching this, because they do, you know, she's like on the poster. I'm looking at it right now. She's like third down. So like you have Martin Luther King Jr., Coretta, and then Oprah is like right next. And like in terms of screen time, that is not accurate at all. So
Yeah, she's not critical to the film. I will say that.
No.
And then The only other things, these are kind of nitpicky, but the only two other things I thought about represent other people's stories. So I would have liked to hear more of Coretta's point of view. I know this movie wasn't about Coretta Scott King, but I feel like we barely got to know her. We never saw the kids.
No.
Which they had four kids. Like we never get to see any of that. And you can kind of see Coretta suffering in silence, but I doubt that that was her entire story. So I would have liked to know that. And then I had very odd feelings about President Johnson. To this day, I don't really know much about his presidency. Like I doubt he was a revered president because I don't hear about him, but also I know it was a tumultuous time. I know it was bad that he got thrust into the position when JFK got assassinated, but I couldn't tell in this movie, like even at the end, whether he cared about this movement and helping and being on the right side of history, or if he did things so that he would look good politically. Like I could never tell if he was going to be like, yes, I'm behind you, Martin Luther King, or if he was like, oh, I'll go with it because such and such told me to, or this donor gave me money. Like I couldn't tell. And then I just kept thinking, JFK is another person that I have very complicated feelings about for much the same reason. He was a philanderer, but I wonder if he would have hesitated to give the black community these rights, because I don't think he would have. I think JFK was all for this happening and all for this movement, which is why it was such a shame to the nation when he was tragically killed. But I just felt like Johnson, I don't know if that was like the portrayal they put in the movie or what, but I was very confused about him by the end.
Yeah, that is definitely one thing that I would dislike as well. And there is like a lot of the controversy with this movie is based on the portrayal of Johnson. And now this is coming from like the LBJ Presidential Library, but they say he was seen as like a champion of civil rights legislation and a proactive partner of King, and that the movie kind of portrays him more as like restrictive and obstruction and like reluctant to make change and things like that. So that is the like biggest complaint with this movie, is that the relationship between Johnson and King maybe isn't 100% accurate. There's another person, Andrew Young, who was later a U.S. congressman and the mayor of Atlanta, said, you know, the relationship between Johnson and King was the only thing I would question in the movie. Everything else, they got 100% right. He said the two were already always mutually respectful, and that King always respected Johnson's political problems, and the same vice versa in that situation. So that is one dislike of the film. I don't know why they decided to portray him in a negative light. Maybe because I add some drama to the movie, which you need in some parts, I guess, to kind of create like a villain.
Right.
So they created Lyndon B. Johnson as kind of the villain. But it seems like from these few things that I've read, that he was very willing to work with Martin Luther King Jr. and kind of promote change and help change happen, which you see at certain parts of the movie. But then you're like you said, in other parts, it's like he doesn't want anything to do with them, and he, you know, doesn't want to help progress things.
Yes. Yeah, sorry to anybody in LBJ's family or whatever, but it was more this portrayal. He seemed very wishy-washy, and wishy-washy is not a trait that I admire.
No. So with that, that's basically all of our likes and dislikes for Selma. So we'll go ahead and give our grades now for the movie. You can go ahead and go first on this episode, because I think I went first on the help. So
thank you. You absolutely did. Okay. So as far as like the way this movie was done, I think like beauty wise, like just how beautiful it was, and the story and what it stands for, I would want to give it 100, but I'm going to go with 90. That is right around where that's right between the critics and the audience. I think it's wonderful. I do think some of the characters were flawed. I don't like that they didn't focus at all on Coretta or the impact of what he was doing with his life, how it impacted his family. So I just would have liked a little more of that explanation, but it's a phenomenal movie. It definitely deserves the buzz. And I'm pretty outraged, honestly, that the Oscars completely snubbed it.
Yeah, just real quick before I give my score, we'll just mention what it was nominated against for the Best Picture category. So it was against The Grand Budapest Hotel, Imitation Game, Theory of Everything, and Birdman, which Birdman won, which I guess is fine. Birdman is a fine movie. It doesn't really say much about anything, honestly.
I remember being really angry that year because I don't know that the Theory of Everything should have won, but it is to this day one of my favorite movies. I watch it I mean, that's a once a year at least movie for me. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. I love what it stands for. Imitation Game was another one of those movies where it was someone
another
who...
Another good movie, yeah.
Yeah, and another person who was part of like this disenfranchised group and was totally pooped on. And so that that movie said something. I felt like Birdman didn't really teach us anything. I think people were just like, oh my gosh, this camera trick is so cool.
Yeah. And then they gave it the Oscar. One shot camera thing for 2 hours.
Right.
Great. Cool.
Right.
And then Grand Budapest Hotel. Fine that it was nominated for Best Picture. Probably shouldn't win Best Picture. It's a fine little movie, but it's not like, not really saying much about anything, honestly. It's just more comedic. So,
right.
Yeah. In that year, three movies that were all based on real life events out of the five. So definitely was like a lot of movies, like historical movies that year for the Oscars too. So my score for this is going to be an 87 out of 100. So just a little bit below
we're
you.
We're really close.
Yeah. I did enjoy it on the rewatch. Would I watch it a third time? I don't know. Cause I feel like watching it twice now, I've kind of gotten everything out of it that I need to. But the performances are great. The script is really good. Her direction is really great. But I don't know, like you said, with the lagging in the middle a little bit, I don't know if I would watch it a third time just because I don't know if it would hold my interest three times. Or it would have to be a couple years in between, kind of like this viewing was. This like this 5 years after I saw it the first time. So, but I did really enjoy it. So 87 out of 100 for Selma for me. Also, just wanted to mention again here on the Silver Screen Podcast that if you have something you would like us to review or maybe a type of film that we should look into, if you're like, I like science fiction or you should do the Indiana Jones movies or whatever, just let us know on social media. It's at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. And then just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and you can find us there. And feel free to just leave us send a message, leave a comment on a post or something like that, just telling us what you might like to see reviewed on the show, because we still have a lull in movies coming out. So we have another month and a half or so where nothing's going to be coming out in theaters, and that could get pushed back even further due to coronavirus. So we may have this issue for a little while. So,
but please feel
free
to
suggest things. Yes.
Please wear a mask. And if you wear a mask, we can all go back to the movie theaters.
Exactly. This is a pro mask podcast.
Pro mask.
Be sure to wear your mask.
It's just the courteous thing to do.
Over your mouth and your nose. Please do both. So, so with that, we're kind of going to transition here on the show. And we did this series based on African-American films and filmmakers. We did four movies in that kind of category. And we're going to do next a classic movie, because we haven't really done a movie on this show that has come out like before 1970. So we're going to do a really old movie, which is The Philadelphia Story, which I don't think I've seen. I don't think I've seen it, but I know you have. Katie, Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Katharine Hepburn are all in this. And it's kind of a lighthearted movie, so we wanted to do something that was more lighthearted for the next episode.
Yes, I absolutely love this movie, and all three of the main characters are three of my very favorite actors of all time and from the golden age of Hollywood. It's a great film.
So that'll be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, The Philadelphia Story, which we will mention is on HBO Max right now, if you have that, or you can rent it for like $3 on YouTube if you would like to check it out.
Yes.
And you haven't seen it before. So that's what we will be discussing coming up on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.